And I'm promoting my new album, Pan-African Soul. It's a Fakoly production and will be released by Malaika Music on February 19th. I also want to thank my distributor, Megawave Records, and my promoter, Born Free Street Team, and everybody who supported me on this path. Now, just take a listen. Enjoy.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. This is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, the bluesologist who is based in Toronto, Canada. And we came out of the box tonight with the music of Mayimbe Malaika out of Germany. That is some Pan-African soul, and she is born in Germany, and she is... has a German mother and a Congolese father. She is from the Democratic Republic. Father's from the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo. And she supports Diasporic Music, Uhuru Radio, and the Movement for African Liberation. And I would like to thank two people for giving me the idea and the spot on Uhuru Radio. Chairman O'Malley Ishitella gave me the time and the space to do diasporic music on Uhuru Radio, and Archie Shepp gave me the concept of diasporic music. Music made in the West, but not of the West, and both of these gentlemen, for whatever it's worth, were born in Florida. We have some real exciting shows on diasporic music. We have many, many, many shows, and we wanted you to listen to as many as you can. We have Straight from the Streets, O'Malley Ishitella Speaks. We have Africa Live. We have Africa Live is hosted by Dion Sankara. Reparations in Action is hosted by Penny Hess. Revolutionary Health and Fitness, and that is John Thomas. And Golden Sunday Sounds is handled by Ron Bob Simple. Black Agenda Report is handled by Glenn Ford and Nellie Bailey. Caribbean Forum is Ron Bob Simple again, and Great Moments in African History, handled by Ron Bob Simple. And we have a great show from Sweden, Report from Africans in Sweden and throughout Europe, with two sisters from who are based in Sweden, two sisters from Somalia. And we have an exciting show for you today. We're going to be speaking with Ricky Vinson. Ricky Vinson is based in Oakland, and he's in the Bay Area, and he's the author of Party Music: The Inside Story of the Black Panther Party Band, and how Black Power transformed soul music and funk. And he also did a book on the funk, and we're going to be speaking to him about George Clinton's book. We're also going to be speaking with Butterfly. Butterfly is an organizer. She's a community journalist, a former host of News Now, and she is going to be speaking about CHRY, that is a radio station in Toronto, Canada, that is going through a lot of changes, and we're going to be, these changes are not nice changes, and we're going to be talking about that. And we're also going to be paying tribute to Clarksdale, Mississippi, with music from Sam Cooke, Nate Dogg, Muddy Waters, O.B. Buchanan, and Ike and Tina Turner. And diasporic music continues on Uhuru Radio. Mama Africa, Mama Africa, I'm coming home, hello Mama Africa, how are you? I'm feeling fine, and I hope you're fine too. Hello Mama Africa, how are you? I hope when you hear these words, your gray turn blue, gray turn blue. Saying these words to let you know how much I care, and I won't let go, even though we're oceans away, you're with me day by day. Memories of you keep flashing through my of you.
If not in May, then you'll see me.
Uhuru Radio.
Black power in black community.
And we're calling on all Africans. We recognize that as a people, we have tremendous skills in our community.
Informative.
So we've got to take all the skills that we've learned. You know, we got to take all of our energy, and we got to find a way to contribute to making sure that African people have a future.
No degrading lyrics.
Africa is the future. Africa is the future. Africa is the future. Africa is the future. There ain't no future unless we build it now.
Finally, the station you've been looking for. Uhuru Radio.
Come, join us on the 2015 Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, a fun-filled, African-centered cruise aboard the Carnival Splendor, departing from the port of Miami, Florida, making stops in Cozumel, Belize, Honduras, and the Cayman Islands. With the unique perspective and insight of Omali Yekshitela, chairman of the African Socialist International, we invite Africans everywhere, as well as friends and allies, to share in this amazing experience of African culture, history, great food, and friendship, all on a relaxing cruise for 8 days from November 29th to December 6th, 2015. For more details and reservations for the 2015 Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, call our exclusive agency, Tanya's Travel, at 352-693-3034. You may also log on to yahoolegacycruise.org to view the itinerary and pricing information. Call today, because procrastination is the thief of time. The 2015 Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, setting sail November 29th through December 6th. Call Tanya's Travel at 352-693-3034. That's 352-693-3034. Or log on to yahoolegacycruise.org, and we'll see you on the open sea.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, the Blues Hour, just speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And we just heard two selections about Mama Africa, one from Hubert Winston McIntosh, a.k.a. Walde Semayat, and brother from one of the original Wailers, and he did that rendition of Mama Africa with Sonny Okosun out of Nigeria. That was one of Peter's tours to Africa. He spent some time in Nigeria, hooked up with Sonny Okosun, and they came up with Mama Africa. We also heard from Garnet Silk, the late Garnet Silk, and he did this a song with the same name, Mama Africa. We're going to be speaking with Ricky Vinson, and Ricky Vinson is a funketeer. He has a book called Funk, The Music, The People, and The Rhythm of the One, and the foreword was by George Clinton, and Ricky is going to be talking about George Clinton's new memoir. But right now, we wanted to take you to Guadeloupe. Guadeloupe is in the it's in the Western Hemisphere, but it is a French territory. You know, the imperialism did a job on African people, and the English got a piece of us, the French got a piece of us, the Spanish got a piece of us, the Dutch got a piece of us, and these sisters and brothers were taken to Guadeloupe, and the name of the group is Kassav, and Miles Dewey Davis said that, and they're from Guadeloupe, like I said. Miles Dewey Davis said that Kassav, Prince, and Fela Kuti, that was the future of music, and they were going to set the trend in music, and he's pretty close to calling it, because Fela's music is taking over, and Prince is still a factor. And we live in the English-speaking world, so we really don't know how big Kassav is, but they're coming to Toronto shortly. And we wanted to give you some music from Guadeloupe right now. The group is called Kassav.
One way.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And we just played some music from Guadeloupe, some Zouk music, and the music the Zouk music is basically comes out of Martinique and Guadeloupe, and that's the French territory. they produce some great music in the French territories, or I should say Martinique and Guadeloupe produce some great thinkers. Franz Fanon came out of Martinique.
Okay.
And joining us on the line from the Bay Area is Brother Ricky Vinson. Ricky Vinson has a book out. His latest book is Party Music, The Inside Story of the Black Panther Party's Band, and How Black Power Transformed the soul music. And before it was by Boots Riley of the Coup. And Ricky's first book was Funk, The Music, The People, and the Rhythm of the One. And it was forwarded by Dr. Funkenstein, George. And we are going to be speaking about a number of issues, but one of the things I wanted to talk to Ricky about was George Clinton's new memoir. What do you think about the new memoir? And it seems to be George seems to be all over social media now. He may be in his 70s, but he's using that social media like a kid. I guess he's on Twitter, Instagram, the whole number, isn't he?
Yeah, well, see, George appears to be fresher than ever, which, you know, for us lifelong fans of the funk, it, you know, kind of helps validate the idea that, you know, funk has this staying power. It can sit and never go sour. So he's not fading. And there are a lot of reasons for that. He got married, and he's got a sister that's helped cleaning up his act somewhat. And he is determined to get a lot of his royalties back that the royalties were stolen from him by certain entities. And he claims, you know, if you're going to go to court, you have to come to court clean and not look crazy and on crack and on that type of stuff. So he's got some missions that are short term, long term, and you know, he's making the most of the situation. And for a lot of us that have watched our heroes kind of fade and be pushed and, you know, off to the side and be crushed, you know, by the system and by, you know, an industry that, you know, doesn't recognize their work, their legacy, and by ourselves, a community that doesn't really recognize the value of our black music in the last few generations. You know, George is an example of survival and someone that can thrive through all kinds of things. So, George, it's wonderful that he's doing his thing and he's doing it well, and he's able to tell the story of his life, you know, in a way that is engaging. It's not tragic, you know. It's some of it is hilariously funny, but he's real. He's not hiding from nothing. You know, George comes from the funk, so you can't just candy coat things. So it's in that sense, that's some of the best things George has produced in the last few years.
Well, you know, the thing that struck me about it was George is a couple of years older than me, but there's so many things in the book that I can relate to. Like he talks about Frankie Lyman. Frankie Lyman was just a little bit before my time. I think my Smokey Robinson was moved. You know, of course, Frankie Robinson, Frankie Lyman moved me as well. But he talks about Frankie Lyman basically being pre. Well, that's Michael Jackson's. And I guess we know that if we read Berry Gordy's book, we know that. That's where he basically based the Jackson 5 on Frankie Lyman.
I didn't know that either when, you know, and it was before the George's memoir. He had told people, you know, that it was watching Frankie Lyman in the teenagers. That was the first kind of raw funk he saw. He wanted to get his sound and his show to do to the people what Frankie Lyman and the teenagers did to the people. And so that group really kind of changed the game. And I didn't really think about that or realize that until George Clinton mentioned that in interviews decades ago. And now when you pull all the pieces together, it's like, wow, You know, you got your Ray Charles, you got your people that folks know, and then you got your Frankie Lyman and the teenagers who moved a lot of the young doo-wop generation to really, you know, do that with some spirit, with some soul, not just try to be clean cut, but to be, you know, raw, have some passion with it.
I'm sorry for cutting you off. Had you finished?
Yeah, I'm good.
One of the brothers that really, that I really liked in Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, well, I think his name was Herman Santiago. I'm talking about the bass singer. The bass singer was, I don't know, he may have been 16 or something, but I mean, he influenced Melvin. Melvin Franklin of Temptations talks about him, but he was a great, great bass singer, and those brothers could step. Yeah, but Herman Santiago, I think that was his name, but he was, I guess Melvin was one of the, some people argue he was the greatest bass singer of all time. I kind of like Ray Davis, but I don't want to go into who's better, who's worse, but Ray, thinking of George Clinton, that's one of the things about George Clinton that I used to always go to a family reunion and get to argue with my family, and they would all, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Earth, Wind, and Fire. I said, now George got too much ammunition. He got 15 guitar players. He got a singing groups. He's got a band, you know. And I would be, you know, kind of kidding, but kind of serious at the same time. Now, George had an orchestra and singers and bass players and guitarists and Gary Scheider.
Electronics. He had a tribe going there. And
right.
But see, they needed each other. Earth, Wind, and Fire and P-Funk, they both kind of influenced, they inspired one another. Because Earth, Wind, and Fire...
Back and forth, right?
Back in the day, yeah, because they knew what they wanted to do. And both of them wanted to, you know, put this black music on the map and make it as big as possible. And that was that moment where folks had the resources and the consciousness and the vision to really act on this stuff and make these big spectacles of black life and culture and celebrate, you know, ourselves in our music. And, you know, people didn't talk about it enough, but that period, that 70s, is when the great artists could ride the wave of all of the roots, of all the jazz, of all the blues, of all the soul and gospel. And even the way rock was created in, you know, urban black communities and taken, well, we can bring it back. And everything else we learned, the classical music, all of that, the African rhythms, put it all together and put it on the one, and you can make it all fit. And some people really were able to do that, and then they could see their peers doing that also. And so even the bands that didn't have the multi-million dollar shows, bands like Mandrill and War and folks like that, the Barcades, they could, you know, they would keep folks making sure they're at the head of the game, at the top of the game. So Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Ohio Players and Commodores and Isley Brothers, so they all were checking each other to see. P-Funk and, of course, Stevie Wonder could do all this stuff by himself. Before they gave credit to Prince for doing it by himself, Stevie could do that stuff by himself, but then he'd bring the huge band and the big spectacle, and everybody would be studying his music, note for note.
Ricky Vincent of the Bay Area. I remember 1977, I attended the Los Angeles Coliseum, the Funk Fest, and it Rufus, Chaka Khan, Brothers Johnson, Rolls Royce, the Isley Brothers, Bootsy's Rubber Band, and Parliament Funkadelic. And Bootsy came on, and I guess the first act to come on was Brothers Johnson, Rolls Royce, Chaka, and then Bootsy. And the Isley Brothers were supposed to come on after Bootsy, but once Bootsy came on, the Isley Brothers, whom I never saw in my life, and I bought the first record I bought ever, I think, was Shout in 1957 when I was 11 years old. And I was looking forward to seeing the Isley Brothers. Well, next thing I know, the Isley Brothers did the same thing that Roberto Duran did in Montreal when he was fighting Sugar Ray Leonard.
No mobs. They didn't come out. No. They did not come out. And George, that's when they had the mothership, and they landed the mothership, and I think it was Glenn Goins, if Glenn Goins could have sang with the Temptations, I mean, if he wanted to, once Glenn sang, it was over, you know, you might as well go home and go to sleep, you know, it was, I don't know if anybody could have followed Glenn Goins.
Well, that's a fascinating scenario. I wonder if that's in George's autobiography, but, you know, a lot of bands, you know, kind of got the comeuppance when they had to deal with P-Funk. They thought they could play funky music, and then they'd see what P-Funk did, and then they have to go back and start over again and say, well, you know, wait a minute. You know, maybe I'm just a Latin funk band. Maybe I'm just a jazz funk band. Maybe I'm just a pop funk band. But these guys are the pure funk band, and let's just call it what it is and keep on going. So I don't know what might have happened. I do know the Isley Brothers, they had a classy funk show, but that's not the same as a thunderous Take No Prisoners and raw funk show. And so maybe that had something to do with it.
It was at the LA Coliseum. It was 80,000. Uh-huh. It was a Coliseum, so there were almost 100,000 people in attendance. Ooh. And it was at the Los Angeles Coliseum, and they played. I remember they played Got to Give It Up by Marvin Gaye. The record got a standing ovation. And James Brown, It's Too Funky in Here, da, 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 da. You know, and they played those two songs. I mean, they played a lot of songs, but I remember those two songs. I got the most reaction. Marvin got a standing ovation for his record. And, you know, James wore him out with that record, too. Well, and Earth, Wind & Fire, they were backstage there, too. That everybody was at that concert. Earth, Norman Whitfield, everybody was there.
Yeah, well, see, that's where George knew that. He had been all around the business, and he said, well, let me check out how the gospel's doing. Let me check out how rock is doing. Let me check out how the soul singers are doing. And then he had the crazy funk band, the Funkadelics. And so he was in tune with what was happening. So he could push his band members, bring the ideas, get Bootsy involved, you know, and push the sound, push the energy, push the attitude, and like I said, keep up. Now, if the other bands weren't there, George might have gotten lazy and not pushed his band so hard. So that's what I'm saying. The whole scene, everyone affected everyone else. And that's what made it so magical, so musical, so beautiful, you know. And this is right when, you know, the Imitators was waiting in the wings, the disco sound and the electronic Imitators in the 80s and 90s came along to kind of siphon, you know, sterilize it somewhat. But right then, it was, there was a competing dynasty, like the Oakland Raiders and Pittsburgh Steelers and Dallas Cowboys, and all having it out in the 70s at the same time.
Well, let me ask you something. Did you ever talk to George about his city in Toronto? He used to live in Mississauga, and his daughter, one of his daughters, Barbarella, the last time I saw him, he was in, he came up here, played in a place called the Concert Hall, and he introduced me to Barbarella. Did he ever talk to you about his days in Toronto? Because he says that he saw the mother. He saw the mothership when he was on the 401 in Toronto. He and Bootsy were driving, and they saw the flying saucer. And he came up with the mothership connection idea.
Well, I never asked him about it. I've seen that written down, and I've sort of gone with that. And that's part of the P-Funk lore, as it were. And I started looking more into that, and there's a lot of folks that are, you know, kind of visionary black leaders that have had an encounter. You can go back and look at Sun Ra. You can look at Elijah Muhammad said he had seen the UFO, and you have a lot of these black thinkers that are thinking beyond where we are that have had an encounter of some kind. You know, maybe not, you know, a spectacular encounter, but if you see something, you know, in space that dwarfs your whole view of what, you know, is the world is what's possible, you know, that's going to change your thinking. And so it was really interesting, that sort of lineage of folks that, you know, really have been touched by something beyond, and they try to push their craft, their art, their people beyond as well. So I was glad to read that and see what George and Boots, I mean, who knows what it might have been, what it really was, but what they did with it was pretty outstanding.
For people who don't know, who was Sun Ra? You know, a lot of people listening to this show have never heard of Sun Ra. Sun Ra is, how would you describe Sun Ra?
Sun Ra is probably the most authentic interplanetary artist that Black America has ever produced. Herbert Blunt, he came out of the South, and he moved to Chicago in the 1950s and took on this cosmic name, Sun Ra, and very early on, even before electronic instruments, he was talking about music of the spheres and traveling to Saturn and taking Black people to a planet where there's no white people, to destroy our natural vibe and things like that. He was really eclectic. And what happened was he drew like a traveling troupe of followers that were, I mean, they're almost like monks. I mean, they would literally worship, you know, some of the ideas that he would do, but they were a musician. They were a group. They were a band, and they would travel, the orchestra. And his music was pretty dissonant, pretty far out. But his vision was so far out, you just like, well, there's no middle ground. I have to go with this. I mean, some artists sort of compromise a little so that you can reach them. And Sun Ra wouldn't compromise. But he existed as this underground genius for like 30, 40 years in the business. And it was just the enlightened ones that were able to touch on him to find out where he was. And he never... It wasn't an act. It's not like you could hear him, you know, talk about, you know, there's another planet where there's no white people and we need to, you know, save our race by teleporting there, and we'll use music for our teleportation mechanism. And he does that. It's not like he turned that off and went and, you know, hung out somewhere and stopped talking like that. That was how he was. That's how we talked. That's how we thought. And he knew that music was a channel, and there was these other forces, cosmic outer space waves that he could tap into. And on one level, he's not much different than some of our spiritual leaders who really, really pushed the, you know, the faith in other worlds, you know, forward. And but Sun Ra was a jazz musician who's both loved and ignored by the tradition.
I am speaking with Ricky Vincent, author of Party Music, and I was blessed to have seen Sun Ra in 67, I believe. He did the music for a play by, I think he was Imamu Amiri Barak at that time, called A Black Man.
Okay.
It was a story, you know, based on the Nation of Islam. Demonology of how the white race came into existence by the mad scientist, the big head scientist Yacoub. Yeah, I saw that. That was deep, and the music was. I remember, and I never will forget. It was his sister. I can't think of her name right now. But she was selling about racism in the kitchen, and she was talking about spaghetti coming from China and pizza coming from China. And this is 67, 68, so I'm barely out of my, you know, out of my teens. And I'm listening to this stuff, and I'm, damn, this is some deep stuff here, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think George Clinton built upon that, the idea that you can take as much of it as you want to take, and that was fine, and that's what an artist does. That's what music. That's what, you know, your faith is for. Some people are going to hold hardcore to the scripture, and some people are going to interpret it in other ways and stuff like that. But it was just important that it was out there, You know, our young people today, they don't have a diversity of visions of our larger selves to work with, to develop, you know, who they are, who they think they can be, and things like that. And, you know, sometimes folks, you know, when we're around them back in our day, you know, they seem like maybe they were extreme, or maybe they was, you know, too far into something. But that's how you learn. You say, well, let me get some of that, you know, let me dabble in some of that over there. Let me dabble in some of this over here. And, but today's generation, doesn't necessarily get exposed to the Afrocentric scholarship, or get exposed to, you know, people that have a larger vision for redemption of the human race, redemption of the black race, transformation of human civilization, things like that. We're not socialized to think about those things. We're supposed to think about instantaneous, take an Instagram, take a picture, just live for the instant, and not think long term about, you know, who we are, who we've been, and where we are capable of going, if you just unplug for a minute.
Let me ask you this. George Clinton, how much was he influenced by the Nation of Islam? And I think it was it a Progress Church, one of the churches that he was involved in? I know.
George Clinton, unfortunately, however you want to look at it, he doesn't really speak on, you know, coming up in the church. And so faith to him was another, I don't want to reduce it to this, but it seemed like another hustle. He saw the folks, and I mean, I guess I'm not saying things blasphemous. Bobby Womack talks about that. There's more sinners in the church than there are at the juke joint. But anyway,
I don't want to cut you, but my father was the same way. I mean, he said it in very not so subtle ways that, you know, the preacher hustles, and don't give me your money. Basically, that was his position.
Okay, well, yeah. So, but George, he just sort of has this way of not having boundaries. So if something came at him that was, you know, out of the gospel church, or something that came at him that was out of some other faith or some other belief system, he just played with it. He said nothing is good unless you play with it. So he would have fun with these things. So the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which is this small group of folks that would write these polemics about, you know, what the world is at risk of being destroyed because of humanity's, you know, fear of itself. He just sort of came across these folks and thought it would be funky on his record. He didn't necessarily live by, you know, what they were saying. He just knew this was going to shock some folks and knock some heads around and you know, and get you to think. His thing was to make you think, not tell you what to think, but just get you to think. So he was just having fun with the process. You know, they got into some minor controversies because people thought these were some death-worshipping black rockers and stuff like that. And they just said, well, all right, so let's do a, you know, let's climb out of a coffin and do a stage show like that. Just have fun, you know, play with some of these crazy themes. And, you know, so he was just sort of comfortable out there on the edge. And so he was having fun with the Process Church of Final Judgment. Now, when he came up with the mothership, and he writes about this in his autobiography, he was just still, you know, clowning around, you know, we have returned to claim the pyramids, just sort of touching on, you know, some of the roots of, you know, the African, you know, roots of, you know, Kemetic civilization and how black folks can connect to that. But he was just having fun with it. And he said that their first tour, they came through, I think it was D.C., and all these brothers in bow ties was in the front row telling George, preach the knowledge, you know, and he got scared by that. He got spooked. And he said, I had to start talking about your money and pussy just so that they would put off guard. He wouldn't have to feel like he was preaching to them. He had to change his whole game because he wants to get people to check stuff out, but he doesn't want to be the one accountable for, you know, what the positions are. He's just like, well, that's over there, this is over here, you know, let's dig into it. But it's up to you which ones you, you know, cling to, which ones you want to really work with. And
all right.
I don't know. It's hard to do that. Some people can do that, and you know, they just float everywhere. I couldn't pin him down to what his religious beliefs are, things like that. But he's helped a lot of us move and grow and think and change. And I think growth is one of his main philosophies, because he's still growing after all these years.
All right, we have about 1 minute left. Is there anything else you would like to ask? I think I've enjoyed doing this interview. It's been very informative. Anything else you'd like
to add? What was that?
Is there anything else you would like to add?
I would like to add?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, sometimes it's easy to say, well, there's no new music. Well, there's no, you know, there's nothing new, but it is incredible how much spirit and life there is in Black music and Black culture. And you just need to sort of blink and take another look, and you'll find something else to keep you going. And if that means going to the 50s and 60s or digging around for the new music, you know, that it's the pursuit is its own reward, and it's worth it. So don't ever let the realities of the square world mess with you, because there's this other spirit that's involved, and you can find it.
All right, so Miles says, Kassav, check out some Kassav and Fela still. His music is still fresh, and, I still like Miles and Herbie and Miles and Coltrane and Miles and Kenan.
That's
where I'm coming from.
That is. And there's people teaching young people how to play, you know, Miles music, young people how to, you know, do jazz combos. Young people, you know, the teachers, you know, teaching folks how to do the James Brown review, do the chicken, and do, you know, some of these complex jazzy R&B arrangements, so that they can sort of figure out how to make real music out of these, you know, energies that we have right now, and we can get that funk, you know, to get us through the day. So you know, it does happen, but you got to turn the TV off and sort of get in touch with the music, as opposed to kind of looking at all the superficial electronics. That's not going to do it for you.
All right, sir. Thank you. And this is the second time I guess you've been on Diasporic Music, and we'll definitely call on you again, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Okay, man. Same to you. Keep on doing what you do. Always happy to be here.
All right, we have been speaking with Ricky Vinson, author of Party Music and Diasporic Music, on Uhura Radio. Continues.
You're listening to uhuraradio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Uhuru Radio.
It's the African woman who wants to see freedom for all African people. We have to join the revolution.
No degrading lyrics.
Don't care where you come from, as long as you're a Black man, you're an African.
Informative.
It's really important that we bring women into political revolutionary life, because it's time for us to form and consolidate the role of African women in this revolution.
Finally, the station you've been looking for, Uhuru Radio.
Nanga Def. Nanga Def is a Wolof, language of Senegal, the Gambia, and Mauritania. The Wolof people who are all around the world, and we are getting ready to pay tribute to Mississippi, Clarksdale, Mississippi is the home, is the birthplace of Samuel C. Cook, Muddy Waters, and Nate Dogg. And we're going to be talking about Clarksdale, Mississippi. But right now, we wanted to listen to a song called Clarksdale, Mississippi, by a young man by the name of Obie Buchanan. And Obie Buchanan lives in Jackson, Mississippi today, but he was born in Beard in Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Still remember being 12 years old, almost every other weekend when we used to go to that old barber shop down on 4th Street so we can get a haircut, my little brother and me. Way's Barber Shop, that was the place. He made us laugh so hard, I wish we could have stayed all day. Clarksdale, Mississippi, my hometown. McCaskey at the hospital and making his ride. We went to Newson Auto Park when Mama car broke down. And when the Crossroads service station did the best that they could, we took it to Freeman Junkyard, cause the car was no more good. New Roxy Theater, where we saw the picture show. And Mount Moriah Baptist Church, on a Sunday we would go. Just a few days ago, when I went back home, most of the places that I talked about are just about gone. And some of the buildings crumbling down. I thank God for the new places for me to go now. Thank God for Mama, she's still living there. When I make it to the top, I'ma build her a new house there.
I would like to dedicate this song to those of you that have left home. You know, I know sometimes you have to leave because things get rough. You may have left home running, but you can come back home walking. And never forget, if you can't go, call and check on your folks sometime. God bless you.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, and we are paying tribute to Clarksdale, Mississippi. Clarksdale, Mississippi is the birthplace of a young man by the name of Lerone Bennett. Lerone Bennett Jr. is a scholar, an author, and he wrote Before the Mayflower, a very important book. One book that really helped me understand what was taking place. Lerone Bennett was born in Clarksdale. He wrote for Ebony Magazine, and Walter Rodney really bigs him up as a historian. And we are going to look at some of the people that have come out of Clarksdale, Mississippi. Basically, we're looking at the artists, and you know, some of the artists that came out of there were Sandman, L.C. Cook, Howlin' Wolf, Robert Johnson spent some time there. Robert Johnson, great musician. Ike Turner, and we're going to be, Nate Dogg came out of there, and we're going to be listening to Nate Dogg. Charles Wright came out of Clarksdale, Mississippi. Charles Wright, we've had him on Diasporic Music many times, and he's famous for the song Express Yourself. And Jackson, Mississippi, and Mississippi as a whole is where the Choctaw Indians were. They were moved from Mississippi to Oklahoma. And my grandmother, Rose Glover, my grandmama Rose was a Choctaw. That was my great-grandmother. I had an opportunity to meet my great grandmother. She was half Choctaw and half African. She was my grandparents lived in Winsboro, Louisiana. Winsboro, Louisiana. There was a chapter of the Garvey movement in Winsboro. They moved, George Glover and Rose Glover moved from Mississippi to Winsboro, Louisiana. And like I say, the Choctaw Indians were part of the whole Clarksdale, Mississippi thing, but they were forced, ran out of Mississippi and moved to Oklahoma. But right now we're going to play something from a young man who came out of, who was born in Clarksdale, Mississippi, and he ended up in Long Beach hanging out with Snoop Dogg or Snoop Lion, whatever his name is now. And he sings, this is a, Nate Dogg is a, get to the late Nate Dogg is a, he does, this is called Ghetto Opera. This is Nate Dogg and Never Leave Me Alone.
When it's hectic, when I don't have a leave me alone. snitched on me, and the judge just sentenced me to do about a century. I'm mobbing through the county main line back in 9500, just trying to handle my spitting game at the homies about the good old days. As we try to pass time, waiting for the chain to Chino, I see no reason to cry, but I miss my baby boo and my baby spanky too. It's true that the dirt I did, from an OG to a snotty-nosed kid, got me caught up in the rapture like May's days gone by. And real G's gon' cry, but I try to walk the yard with my head to the sky and hope my baby boy ain't got somebody on the outside. Well, what's the chance that it ain't cracking? If I was out and she was in, I'd probably be maggot. I can't lie, so I say I would. Now my girl in the world will play a hood, a player should show a brother love and look out. But the G's I know will probably turn your ass. So keep away, better yet stay away, and hope I get out one day, okay? But if I don't, I guess this is home. My girl is tripping, she got a block on the phone.
Spread yourself. yourself, raise yourself, raise respect. Walk up. Hey,
Ni hao to all of our listeners who speak Mandarin, one of the biggest languages on the planet Earth. And we just heard Ike and Tina Turner. It's going to work out fine. Ike Turner was born in Clarksdale, Mississippi. We also heard from Charles Wright and the Watts 103rd Rhythm Street Band. They did Express Yourself. And Charles Wright has been on Diasporic Music on several occasions, and he is based in Los Angeles, California now, doing very, very well. Nate Dogg, his daddy was a preacher in Clarksdale, Mississippi, and Nate Dogg moved to Long Beach, and he hooked up with Snoop Doggy Dogg, or Snoop Lion, whatever his name is today. And Nate Dogg is no longer in the land of the living, but he made his contribution to the music of African people. Today is the final day of the African Must Unite fund drive. With your help, we can reach the fundraising goal. The Africa $1 billion campaign is raising $15,000 for Chairman Omali Ishitela and other Uhuru Movement organizers to unite our brothers and sisters in Azania, South Africa, with our brothers and sisters struggling here inside the U.S. and around the world. In November of this year, Chairman O'Malley and several African People Socialist Party activists will travel to South Africa to build and organize our forces on the ground there. This is your opportunity to invest in the future of self-government and liberation of Africa and African people everywhere. So please go to GoFundMe.com/African Nation Tour and donate today. That is GoFundMe.com/African Nation Tour and donate today. And Uhuru. You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. And one of the great people that came out of Clarksdale was Muddy Waters. And he did a song called I Am the Blues, which was written by another brother from Mississippi. That is Willie Dixon. But it was written by Willie Dixon, but this is being performed by Muddy Waters. We're going to hear from Muddy Waters, and then we're going to hear from Sam Cooke, and then we're going to be speaking with Butterfly of Toronto, Canada. And this is I Am the Blues by Muddy Waters.
Oh, troubling mind. Yeah, I wish somebody would come and ease my troubling mind. Oh, yes, I do. Why won't somebody come and ease my troubling mind? Yeah, I sure wish somebody would come and ease my troubling mind. Oh, yes, I do. I wish my baby would come and tell me everything's all right. Yeah, I sure wish my baby would come and tell me everything is still all right. Oh, yes, I do. They tell me when you tell somebody your troubles, trouble fly away from you. I'm looking for somebody. I can tell my troubles too. Why won't somebody come and ease my troubling mind? Yeah, I sure wish somebody would come and ease my troubling mind. Oh, yeah.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhura Radio. We have just concluded our tribute to Clarksdale, Mississippi with Sam Cooke, Somebody Ease My Troubling Mind. And we also heard from Muddy Waters, and he did Willie Dixon's song, Willie Dixon Peace. And joining us on the line from Toronto, Canada is Butterfly, and she is a longtime community journalist, a former host of News Now, and she's a resident of the Jane Finch community in here in Toronto. And I know I have something out. I think you were a part of, or you are a part of, is it OPERG? And could you could you explain what that is? OPERG?
Yeah, OPERG. It's one of the student groups at York University. Yes, thank you so much for having me and the movement around saving CHRY, a community movement. So thank you so much.
That's no problem, but I wanted to, basically, this show is the internet, so we're broadcast all around the world. CHRY is a station that was, or that is, based at York University in Toronto, Canada, and could you talk about, give us a history, what was CHRY, and what is going to take place now?
So CHRY is a community radio station. Our community radio stations in Toronto have been under attack. And York University, CHRY, is one of the few that's left in the community's hands up until recently. The station's been around for many decades. We have programmers that have been volunteering on the station for 25 years. And as of May 1st, 2015, programmers were shut out. This announcement happened the night before at their annual volunteer meeting. And if you weren't at the meeting, you got a phone call saying your services were no longer needed if you were programming the first So this is a shock to community, to the listeners, to programmers, to donors, to students, of course. It's a shock.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead. I'll cut you off.
I was just going to say, you know, CHRY is known of being the base for cultural radio from the Caribbean to Latin America to Africa. This station has been the voice of diversity locally and around the world. The surrounding community of York University, where CHRY is housed, is the Jane and Finch community, which is known as the melting pot of the world in so many different ways in Toronto, Canada.
Now, the you actually had Sri Lankan shows on CHRY.
Yes, yeah, it's a diverse show. I mean, who's represented it in the community in terms of the cross-cultural community? There's space at CHRY to represent the Toronto listeners and global listeners alike.
Now, do you have any idea of what? Okay, now in Toronto we have a station called G98.7, which is I guess it's urban. There's no longer any black or world. I mean, well, black radio station. CHRY was not considered a black music station, but its base was, I guess, based around a lot of black music and a lot of news from the Caribbean and Africa. Am I correct in saying that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But we have this station here in Toronto called G98.7, and it looks as if the vibe, this news station, is trying to go after their market. It looks like one of the things that they're going to do different, instead of being a R&B base, and I personally think that some of the music that they play on G98 is some of the best music that you can have. They might play a little bit too much North American for this particular audience, but I think that the CHRY is going to try to compete with them, and they're going to try to play more reggae, I believe, than the U.S. stuff. Am I correct in saying that?
You know, to be honest, I think the direction they're going is moving to a mainstream commercial path. The value of community radio is, of course, the culture and the music, but it's also the spoken word. It's to contextualize what's happening around the world in our back homes, in a lived experience voice, not in a commercial or propaganda. I mean, this is what, if you do hear our stories from our back homes, it's not grounded in ethics and storytelling and a lived experience. And this is a big part of the loss that we're facing in losing CHRY is the archive and the narrative of many and so many of our back homes is being watered down or commercialized, and this is already being done. So stepping into a market that already has competitors and moving away from a space that is, there is an advantage. There is an advantage to have a community base, and moving down this path, it's just not authentic to where it started, where CHRY started, and the reputation it has. Listeners right now don't know what's happening. You know,
What is on the air at the currently? Is it dead, or is it just music, or what?
It's looped program. It's not like, I mean, you don't have our programmers there. So they're either playing recorded, pre-recorded stuff, looping music. I mean, it's very much of a mishmash of things that are happening. Programmers are getting emails and phone calls asking what's happened to their show. So the communique that's gone out to the listeners and even the donors, I think, has been really fragmented. People are very confused.
Let me say that. Did I cut you off? Go ahead. Keep on.
No. Go ahead, Norm.
No, I'm saying that the music on CHRY, the music on G98 is good music, but it's some of the worst spoken word that I had I've ever heard in my life. And Caribbean people are supposedly among the most intelligent people on the planet Earth, but you would never know it listening to G98 their talk shows. Let me go on record saying that Mr. Gordon, Fitzroy Gordon, is not the lightest bulb in the room, and it's kind of sad listening to. I'm looking at the heroes of Jamaica. You know, I'm looking at Garvey and William Gordon and Buster Manty, Norman Manley, Nanny, and all the national heroes of Jamaica on my wall, and you would never get that from listening to that radio station. The record to reflect that, you know. And I do like the music that they play, like I'm saying. Maybe people would say that I did apply for a job there. They never even got back to me. But the only reason I applied was because I know that if I didn't apply, people would be criticizing me. But that's neither here nor there.
It's definitely a loss to lose the platform of CHRY 105.5 FM. It's been a vehicle for so many different localized movements. It's brought light to so many different inequities that, you know, communities are facing, whether it's making noise about the minimum wage, whether it's making noise and awareness around food security, police brutality, to allow space for people to speak their stories in an uncensored, unbiased way. These platforms exist, but they're very much controlled and edited. It's a huge loss. I mean, in terms of emerging artists who have gotten their breakthrough on community radio platforms, it's a huge loss to the emerging talent that that is coming up. And a lot of our pioneers have come through radio, community radio, have had their first opportunity on community radio. And not just to play their music, but to know the artist and their story and where they're coming from. There's many, many ways community radio has been a vehicle for social justice causes and movements locally and connecting it around the world. So it's a fight that people are taking on, programmers, volunteers, students, listeners. People are paying attention and are wanting to hold whoever it is accountable to these practices. There's a lot of unsurety on how these decisions were made, whether they were grounded in ethics or the powers that be. But people are ready to push, and it's been a lull in terms of the response from community, but people wanted to mobilize and really understand what's happening for our next steps to be really grounded in principles. There's been a community meeting, a planning meeting, and there will be another one on Wednesday, June 10th. So there's some momentum. There's social media platforms being launched right now. Open letters have been sent. So we're definitely trying to hold management and leadership of CHRY accountable and really mobilizing community and listeners and students to push hard to find out like what happened to our community radio station. Holding on to these days. Yes, go ahead.
Where do you feel this is coming from? Do you think this is coming from the state, York University, because, CKLN was rubbed out, and, we had thought that there was a move against any kind of independent radio
station. And once again, let me let the record reflect that the Conservative Party gave G98, that's how they got this station, was through the Conservative Party, straight up. I was there when, you know, Jason Kennedy was on the stage, and they had the Conservative Party's flag, not their own flag. Do you think that it's this hit is coming from the state?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I also feel there is a push to keep community silent. This is just as much connected to policing or heavy military on the road, to high pushout rates out of schools. This is all interconnected as far as I'm concerned. I used to program the show 5 years ago for 5 years, and I had to step away. But I was in other spaces, the Driftwood Festival, where there's an annual partnership with CHRY to do these festivals. And it's always been a big event. Community looks forward to it. CHRY looks forward to it. But over the past 5 years, I've seen them pull away, not being really clear why, with the whole rebranding. So, I mean, there's been movements in this direction for, I would say, about 5 years. I mean, we see global austerity come down in very different ways. So, I mean, I see a tie to these bigger pieces. But in terms of their strategy, I'm not privy to how this happened, the makeup of the board, the bylaws on how a decision like this could be made. So there's a lot of behind the scene things that we don't know about that really makes us feel that there are some unethical practices happening.
Let me ask you this. How has the press and the York University press responded to it? How has the African Canadian press responded to it? How has the alternative press responded to it? Has there anything been done in the Star, the Globe, the National Post, or what kind of publicity has it generated, the issue?
So not too much in terms of mainstream. I believe the Pride and Share covered the story, but I don't think in depth in terms of the reasoning behind this. I mean, it was more a shutout. There were a few interviews with programmers. But part of our mobilization right now is to make it known. So we're gathering quotes and video testimonies on their connection to the radio station. We're trying to connect with students. We're going to be posting a petition online. So the public awareness to the fullest, there's a lot of work that needs to happen, and it's being worked on right now.
Now, how can people get a hold of, could you give us some of the information as to how people can see and connect with you? You talk about a meeting on June 10th, but are there the social media outlets where people can go and...
On our Facebook, you can look up Save CHRY, and that's also our Twitter, at Save CHRY. We also have a WordPress set up, and it's Your Community Radio 105.5. And on our WordPress, you can find our blogs and our updates of different activities that we're doing. We'll be launching the petition very soon as well, and that will be on change.org. The meeting on Wednesday, June 10th, is at 6:30 p.m. at Driftwood Community Center. And that's right up at Jane and Driftwood in the Jane and Finch area.
Jane and Finch is has been demonized by the press. Used to be demonized. I guess it's getting there's so many people trying to do good work up there. I guess some of that has rubbed off on the situation.
what is taking place in the Jane and Finch area in 2015 as we speak?
What do you mean in terms of the response to CHRY or the bad media from mainstream media coverage?
Both.
Okay. I mean, I feel why we might see a little shift in mainstream media is probably because community will hold media accountable. So there's always been numbers of letters if there's anything that's totally sensationalized or even remotely sensationalized. We do hold mainstream media accountable. But I mean, it's still what it is. If there's a shooting nearby, and it's, you know, not even near the Jane and Finch area, they will still say Jane and Finch. The reality is Pan Am Games is coming in our neighborhood, and this neighborhood already has, so for the listeners who don't know about Tavis, it's a police strategy that's seasonal in communities across Toronto that are similar to Jane and Finch, in terms of the economic and social challenges. But our community, Jane and Finch, has Tavis all year round. So it's the only neighborhood in Toronto that's policed with this other policing strategy. There's always issues, ongoing issues with police and with Pan Am Games coming. There's also investments happening into the infrastructure with transit. So that's happening. These are signs of gentrification. In terms of the community, it's always had these challenges. But in line with CHRY and a community resource being under attack, this is also something that we've been seeing a lot of recently in the neighborhood with three youth-led or entrepreneur pieces totally being shut down. So the Westside Arts Hub and Palisades Media Arts Academy, as well as Ascend, which was a storefront. So these three resources were community-led pieces that would have strengthened economic development, employment, education, that have been shut down.
How did they justify that?
Sorry?
How are they justifying that? They're saying that there's no money for it anymore? Or what is their rationale?
It's usually a combination. Either there's not enough funding, there's been changes in some of these organizations that were lead organizations. There's limitations when residents get involved in creating something in terms of how much power and leadership they hold. And a lot of these frameworks come from the funder. So as much as community might be at the table to vision and lead a project, these dollars are always housed somewhere else. And that makes it difficult when it comes to the absolute power. So it's sometimes funding, it's sometimes the organization who's leading the project, it's sometimes the fear of really allowing community to lead something to its fullest. Losing resources in the neighborhood, sadly, is something that people have faced time and time again. But the resiliency of community to still want to fight for another resource that's being under attack with CHRY, people still find the strength to fight and to resist and to hold on to another community resource that's being under attack.
Let me say this, then I want you to conclude with what you want people to do. But I know at one point CKLN was able to unite African, Euro-Canadians. You had lesbian, gays, you had nationalists and Pan-Africanists and Marxist and socialist, and was, I'm not going to say one big happy family, but we were able to function together. And, you know, women's, you know, International Women's Day, African Liberation Month, I guess CHRY was the same thing. I guess that is what they don't want, because these commercial stations are just about making money. Am I correct in saying
that? Absolutely. And, I mean, when you come to these planning meetings, these are the different walks of life that you see from all these different programming perspectives and storytelling. When you see the community meeting, it is a mix of all different types of politicized identities, but still grounded in the power of community radio, in the transformative change that happens with community radio and programmers and volunteers and our listeners and the donors. And it is sustainable. So I look forward to us coming together and fighting for CHRY. There's a lot of learning from CKLN, and there's folks that have been advising as well. So it's not just the local York University, Jane and Finch fight. It's something that is citywide, national, and global to keep our radio alive. In favelas, radio shows, you know, the equipment will just come into the community and set up, and a radio show will happen. And the only thing that will be left behind is probably some zip ties or some cords or, you know, but community radio is powerful, and it's worth fighting for.
Okay, the last question before you sum up is the people, I don't want to mention the names, but the people that actually supported the new vibe, whatever it's called, I guess people were shocked at them. They didn't expect that coming from those forces, or did they?
I'm not sure really what happened. I mean, I've heard that some programmers have been invited to come back to their shows, and other programmers, majority of the programmers, haven't received any type of correspondence in that way. So I'm in the dark on this one, Norm. I'm in the dark with a lot of this.
Yes.
We're trying to put together all this information, and with the paths that are given to us to request this information. A lot of power is held with the students. So we're really hoping that students will take up the leadership and fight just as hard as community for CHRY.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, or is that, you think you've covered everything?
Sorry, Norm, I didn't hear you.
I was saying, is there anything else you would like to add? We have about a minute, or have you covered everything?
I think I covered everything, but please come out to our meeting on Wednesday, June 10th at 6:30 p.m. at Driftwood Community Center. It's planning meetings. There's a committee work that's been happening. So this meeting will be our next steps and actions that we'll be taking on. So please come out. It'd be great to have folks at the table.
And thank you very much. We have been speaking with Butterfly, a community organizer. She's working with the, I guess, the whole Save CHRY situation. And we will see you in the whirlwind. I would like to thank Lisa Watson for her technical brilliance today. And we will be black next week. And next week is Black Music Month. And June is Black Music Month. And President Obama has dropped Black Music Month. He calls it African American Appreciation Month now. when he uses African American, he's using it just like Jesse Jackson, only to mean the Americans, Negroes, and not Africans in the Western Hemisphere. But we will see you in the whirlwind. And thank you very much, Butterfly.
Of course, brother. Anytime. Thank you so much.
All right. And we will
thanks for your hero listeners. Thank you.
We are going to end with the music of Eric Allen Dolphy, Jr. of Panama, had a Panamanian background, John William Coltrane from North Carolina and Philadelphia. And this is Spiritual, featuring Reggie Workman on bass. He's still in the land of the living. And we will see you in the whirlwind.